because you're jumping back into the gap. All right, to coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game.
Awesome today to have Vance Wahlberg with us, someone that needs no introduction for all the basketball coaches that are listening. And coach, awesome to have you here and to get an update a little bit on the dribble drive and where you're at in terms of modern basketball and the dribble drive. And welcome to the podcast.
I appreciate you having me, Chris.
Coach, we've had a chance to connect over the years, and I've been very fortunate to have learned a lot from you. And I know you've shared so much with so many coaches. And maybe let's just start with, from some of your past experiences, NCAA, NBA, as a head coach, as an assistant coach, and now back to high school, where do you see the dribble drive offense? Does it still stay true to what you thought it was back then, or how much has it evolved?
No, it's evolved. I mean, when I started running it in the middle 1990s, when I started doing it during that time, originally started it just for the fact that, you know, I was so many guards and not very many big men. And then what happened from there is each year my players kind of created the offense with what their best abilities were. I think any good coach, you see who you have, you try and put them in the best positions to succeed. Then I started realizing, you know, back then, you know, everybody put the post on the strong side, yet my post was usually my fourth or fifth best player. And I had some really good guards I could penetrate, and they beat their guy, and my post guy was in the way. So that kind of started the whole evolution of it. I felt in the early 2000s when I started running a lot more, it was going to be the offense of the future. I really did, because there's so many things you can do out of it. I mean, most of us will have some guys that can really take it to the rack. You know, then you can find guys that can shoot. And then obviously the really good players are the guys that can take it to the rack and shoot. So I felt it was going to be a really good offense. And then the way you've seen the whole NBA and the way the college scene has changed, big guys are just not as effective as they used to be. Now, if you get a great big guy, I think everybody's going to say, yeah. I mean, when I was with the 76ers, when I saw JoJo Embiid come in, I go, whoa, this guy's pretty special. There's not too many guys like him out there. And then the other thing with those type of guys is just the injury factor. You know, so many big guys with the stress, and they're so physically good, but they're so big and strong that the body wears down a little bit faster. But the evolution of the game, what I think it's everybody's seen. Now, some teams like the Rockets kind of take a little bit further. I've always had the motto, love layups like threes. I think the Rockets go more of like layups, you know, love threes. So it's a little different, but I've really seen a big change in the game.
Well, it's great. And coach, I don't think you can, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit. Can you watch a team now and not see elements? Like, it's almost impossible to watch any team and not see elements of it in some way, whether it's, as you said, the weak side spacing, the emphasis on the double gaps, you know, just some of the different terminology that you brought to it, even throwing it up to the post rather than bouncing it, which was traditional back in the day.
Yep.
Do you see elements of it in pretty much every team that plays nowadays?
Very much so. And, you know, it's kind of neat. When I did spend my 5 years in the NBA, you know, I'm walking down one time and you had Rick Carlisle walk by me. I knew Rick. I didn't think he knew who heck I was. And he just stopped me and just said, I don't know if you know how much you've helped change this game. You know, and it kind of made me sit back and think and go, wow, you know, here's an NBA coach that, you know, it's my first year in the league. I mean, who the heck am I? I'm a nobody. Just a high school JC coach, basically. But you can see a lot of the different things. And you're right. Just that pass thrown it to the rim instead of throwing the bounce pass. It's such a game changer. I mean, you take a look. I, you know, spent time with the Clippers, working with that. How much did it help DeAndre Jordan catching lobs instead of getting it down low, going up with it? Just little things like that you can definitely see.
Well, when I spent some time listening to Coach Van Gundy at practice over the last few years, I mean, he even went to the point of saying, okay, if it's Boban, throw it to his hands, and if it's Drummond, then throw it in the air above him. So he even got even more specific about the location of that lob, and it was great to see. And again, I see depth to the teaching that you've evolved through the years applied by other people, and that's got to be the greatest compliment.
Well, it's a compliment, but it's kind of neat for me because I know – when I was starting my career, you know, I went and watched a lot of different coaches. I did that for, gosh, I think 18, 20 years. I would see a different college coach for a week, and it was probably the best thing I've ever done. So I've always returned the favor. I have so many coaches that even now, when I'm back in high school, right, that come by, whether it's high school, whether it's junior college, or even NBA. In the last couple of years, different NBA teams have called me up and asked me to come in and work with some of their players. It's been fun. It really has been.
Well, tremendous. And we're going to dive into some of the technical details and kind of get your thoughts on kind of how we can even improve even more. And let's start with something that, you know, I think is an obvious question from my perspective. And that's, what's the biggest mistake coaches make with the dribble drive when they try and teach it? One of my initial thoughts might be that they don't emphasize the skip enough. And that's something that I see when I see some dribble drive teams. I see that they don't attack the weak side. But what are some of the things that you see a little bit, some of the biggest mistakes coaches make?
I would say, number one, they want instant success with it. And when they don't get it, they're kind of like, you know, this isn't what I thought it was. And then what happens, I think another one is they get in the habit of attacking the rack, but they don't know what a good shot is when they get to the rack. Just because you get to the rack doesn't mean you earn the right to shoot it. And I think people don't understand that. I would say number three is a lot of people want to understand the drop zone and put that in. When I go work with people now, and I spend a lot of time with a lot of different people, honestly, I don't even want to touch the drop zone for the first couple of days, just for the fact that it kind of messes them up and they think, you know, that's one of it. So that's one of the other things. And I would agree with you. The other part, Chris, is they have to learn how to utilize the whole court. And not staying on the strong. So many players just stay on strong side, or it's one pass away. When they can learn how to make that next read, and that's why I think the blood drills are so good, that then they start understanding the other side of the court and the skip passes.
Well, we'll get into the blood drills because, again, I think my whole thing is about decision-making and empowering players to make decisions. And, again, those blood drills were ahead of their time in terms of that. Like a small-sided game that really emphasized decision-making is tremendous. But, Coach, the drop zone, you said you wouldn't teach it initially. And that makes sense, again, in the modern game, is that that's not a shot we want. So you talked about shot selection at the rim. Can you give us a few teaching points on what specific things you emphasize? What is a good shot at the rim in terms of the rack zone?
Okay. Think of it this way. Every time you shoot, you want 3 points. Okay. So if I'm taken to the rack, I want to go hard. I want to initiate contact. I want to try and get the and one. Okay. Or I'm going to drive, kick out, and get the open three. So every time we shoot, we want to kind of be greedy. Not saying we're going to get it all the time, but we want to think that way. Then the next thing is, when you get to the rack, can you get a clean shot up? So you just get in there and just throwing it up or getting your shot blocked. To me, getting your shot blocked is probably one of the worst things that you can have done. One, it kind of demoralizes you. Two, usually starts a fast break the other way. But the biggest thing is, I want them to learn, if I can get my shot up, even if the big comes over, I don't care if it's a shot or a shot pass. And what I mean by that, Chris, is if I go up and all of a sudden, oh, I'm kind of stuck in the air, and I go with my baby hook, my semi hook, and that big comes, I just want to get up higher and over him, because now my teammate, my five man, will clean up on the weak side. And that's all I want to make sure. So when I drive it, I want to make sure that I know my reads are real simple. I'm looking to score. If I don't have a good shot, I'm reading 5X. If 5X steps up, I know I'm looking lob. If 5X stays flat, I know I'm going to challenge the rack. Last second might be a baby hook or a wraparound pass. Okay, if he hugs this guy, I know I'm going all the way. And then on our scouting report, we always check, does 5X, do they look to take charges? If they do, we know our five man's going to get a lot of lobs. We know because of him stepping up, we know a stop short, look for the lob game on that. And then the last thing is, when if I drive and I see 5X step over and 3X step down, then we're looking for the skip. So those are what we're looking for.
Well, it's great. And that skip is what I feel also in this modern game and the evaluation, especially when we're talking about a high school player to their next level, or possibly a collegiate player to their next level, is that ability to be able to make that weak side pass. We call it a Ginobili in our program, the ability to be able to drive the opposite slot or lane line and then be able to skip it essentially off one hand, off the dribble to the weak side on time, on target. So is that something that's evolved as well in terms of your teaching and allowing for some more freedom? Do you let players leave their feet? Do you let players be able to pass that with one hand? What are some things that you allow in terms of that ability to be able to attack the weak side?
Great question, and you're exactly right. Obviously, an old-fashioned coach in some ways, and leaving your feet used to always bother me. But then I had a little point guard who, when he would penetrate, couldn't make that pass because he was too small. So, but he was good enough. He used a step back, trip, step back, and then he would jump in the air and throw a two-handed overhead pass. And dang, if it didn't work, I'd say, hey, let's use it. Let's work on it. You know, some people go with the grenade pass. You know, they skip that way. To me, again, I've changed an awful lot, real big, and that's what I think that I love about dribble drive. It's teaching them how to play. It's not teaching them how to run plays. And I want to do the same thing. I want them to be able to play, make the plays. If player X can do it, but because he's 6'4 and make a straight line pass, great. If he's 5'8 and he's got to jump in the air, I have no problem at all.
Well, again, it speaks to something that I emphasize at all levels of teaching, and that's structure to unstructure. Essentially, that the dribble drive gives you a structure to have freedom. But players are much better when they have that initial structure to be able to learn from and those spacing spots or whatever you call it. And there's another thing, and I don't see it as much at the NCAA level, but spacing to the corners is that next evolution of probably the NCAA game that I think, again, in Europe and the NBA, they're already there. But there aren't a lot of NCAA teams that space to the corners. And that's something that dribble drive's always emphasized, is creating those double gaps.
Yeah, and honestly, Chris, what you want more than a double gaps is a triple gaps.
Right.
And that's when you go 1-4, you cut through. Now you got that 4 attacking that big triple gap with 2 in that corner. You know, and the game has evolved so much that there's so many great athletes out there. And again, here's how I feel about the dribble drive. I really feel there's two really big components that I don't think people understand. Okay. One is when you open up those, you know, you get somebody a triple gap, the advantage is yours. Okay. And what I mean by that is you might be a great defensive player. If I'm a good offensive player, I still think a good offensive player can beat a great offensive player with a triple gap. Okay. Now, if I'm an average offensive player and you're a great defensive player, triple gap ain't going to mean anything. I just think what it does when you open up a triple gap, it makes an average player a good player a great player unstoppable. That's how I feel. Then I think the other part of the game I don't think a lot of people understand, and when I was with Philly, Brett Brown, Brett started to understand that, is I know this sounds weird. For me, I would never teach triple threat again. And I know a lot of people would. I wouldn't. I believe in triple threat, but what I want my players to understand is if you catch it standing, I expect you to shoot it. Or I expect you to be on the go. So I want go and catch action, not catch and go. How many times do you see somebody catch it, give a shot, fake, make a move, and the ref calls travel? Okay. See, in my mind, if I'm that guy catching the ball, and what we try to work on, I want you standing if you think your man leaves you and you can get the three. Or if he's hugging you, or if he's in a position, you're in a position where you don't think you can get the three, then I want you either back cutting or kicking up. Or if you're up top, I want you basket cut or kick back. So I want you on the move. So the go and catch action, I think, is really critical.
You're speaking my language. I mean, I'm 100% on board that the triple threat, essentially, again, with the exception of exceptional players at the NBA level where you can isolate and the spacing rules are different. Like, it really, it's not necessary and it doesn't help. And this is must be another question I assume you get, because I get it a lot. And that's that, especially coaches, when they refer to any type of dribble drive or stuff like that, is that my players can't get by anyone. What's your advice to coaches that say my players can't get by anyone, that they drive and they can't go anywhere? What type of advice? I assume it relates back to what you said about spacing and creating that triple gap. But the other thing is to be able to catch it on the go. Is that really what we say to these coaches, or what type of advice can we give them?
Okay. Now, a lot of coaches are going to say get better players, but you know, you're stuck with who you're stuck. Okay. Sure. So my whole thing is, look, if any one of my four perimeters, and again, I've even evolved to now where my five is my four, but I'll go with basic terms for most people. I even like to bring my five out and then start the dribble drive with the five now. You know, I've even evolved to that. But
sorry, coach, are you five out in that situation, or is somebody else in the...
No, somebody else. No, what I do is we cut through and then we flash the five to either the free throw line or the top of the key.
Okay.
And then we cut, and then we start our action that way. So it actually, yes, is a five out with two people moving.
I gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Keep going.
Okay. So old age is setting in on that.
No problem. We were talking about getting past people with the drive.
Okay. Yeah. So hopefully, let me just say this. If all five of your players, if not one of them can beat their guy on a triple gap, you're not winning a game anyway. Let's just be honest. You're going to be shut down in every one of those situations. You're in trouble. And I think through the evolution, and that's what I don't think a lot of people understand. If you stay true to the drills, you stay true to scramble, cardinal, blood drills, the Texas drills, and you do those every day, your players are going to get better and better. And the one thing I realized doing this through the years is a lot of people would say, well, your teams peak early. No, what would happen to our teams is we play so hard, they play well early, but then what happens is the offense starts to come in the second half. We're early, it's not there because we're playing so hard and we don't understand how to run things. And a big part of it is that we're learning how to play basketball and we're not learning how to run plays. A lot of people at the end of the year know how to shut down plays, but if you learn how to play basketball, it's a lot tougher. So to go back to what you're saying, if you can't beat your guy, okay, that's where the drop zone has become really critical. And I think that's what I don't think a lot of people understand. So if I can't beat him, if I get to the drop zone, that starts the whole next part of the offense. And then the one thing from the NBA, especially with Brett coming from the Spurs organization, I started to put a lot more cutting action in with the offense. See, a lot of people, Chris, think that the dribble drive is I'm going to dribble, 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 dribble. It's not. The only time I want you to dribble is when you think you can beat your guy. If you can't, you pass, you cut. You pass the next guy and you cut hard, create that next triple gap. See, what happens is a lot of players want to try and beat their guy off the dribble and they can't or they don't have that triple gap. So if it's a single gap, I don't want you really attacking unless you're just a great player with a bad player guarding you. If it's a double gap and you can beat your guy, go ahead. Okay? If it's a double gap and I can't beat my guy, I still want to see you pass and cut, set the next guy up. Now, if I get that triple gap and I can start to attack, and if I can't beat him, then I can stop on a drop zone because now I got a backdoor action. I got a flash post. I hit the flash post. I got a give and go. Now I got another wide open drive. If my five can't beat him, now I got a DHO into a pick and roll. So there's a lot of other things that you can get out of it.
Well, it's great. And it gets into a question that I definitely wanted to talk about. And that's this concept of empowering the weak side. And you see it with so many good teams. I mean, Villanova, probably the best at this in terms of that second cut, that cut off of a drive where someone on the weak side or someone on the ball side falls asleep staring at the ball, and then someone cuts off of that. And that's really what you're talking about in terms of evolving that drop zone concept, right? Is that now your players are a little bit more empowered on the weak side to be able to move on dribbles?
Well, that's actually a strong side. What I mean by that is, let's say I'm 1-2 and I drive the two gut, right? And I stop on the two elbow. Now the two's going to backdoor. Five is going to flash. One's going to hit five. Then one's going to do a give and go cut. Okay, right to the basket. Now, once he goes, five's got that open lane to take it. If he can't take it, okay, we got four on a pin down to three. Who's going to come off on a DHO from five? And then he rolls with that DHO. It's just different parts of it that it's gone to. That's something down the line. It's not going to be taught in day one or day week one or two, but it's an evolution of the offense just to keep things moving. And then the other thing I just like doing is just, heck, if I can't beat my guy, I'm going to go 1-4, cut. Four is going to go. If he can't beat, he can stop in a drop zone. You can stop in a drop zone. You can look for the skip, because a lot of times if they play good defense, they're hanging in the, you know, they're going to lag in the paint. So you've got the skip, and that starts another part of the offense.
It's great stuff, and there's so many layers to it, which is what makes it really difficult to defend, is that, again, there are so many layers that your players are never stuck. And was that part of the mindset in its creation as well, that it wasn't just the primary attacks or the secondary, it was that your players always had outlets for when they got in trouble?
Well, honestly, Chris, when I started back in, you know, in the mid-90s, you know, to 95, I think it was 96, 97, somewhere I started the beginning of it, what started happening is, honestly, I wanted to get to the rack. I still remember it was a high school game. We lost to a team twice during the season. We lost, I think, by 19 and 23. So now we met them at their house in the semifinals of the section. And I told my guys, because they only played, you know, really six guys, and we played 10, 11. I said, look, we are not taking one outside shot the whole stinking game, the whole half. Halftime, we'll come back and we'll reevaluate what we're doing. But we're going to attack him. We're going to attack him. We're going to attack him. Because that coach was going to play. He was going to play yes man no matter what. And obviously, you can't do that for a whole game or a whole season. But we did it the whole first half. We were up 24 at halftime to a team that we lost two times. You know, we didn't win the game in the mid-20s. You know, and it just made me start thinking, well, why don't we get in this attack mode, stay in this attack mode? You know, then you start putting all the percentages. You know, what happens, you know, what do you score in the rack zone? Or what do you score in the drop zone? What do you score in the, you know, out behind the three? And really, it's just almost, it's common sense. You know, it's simple math of why you would want to do it.
Well, and again, it's tremendous how, just to hear your thought process about how some of it's evolved and everything like that. And another question that I have that comes up is, how much do you emphasize the dribbler countering? So if they attack in one direction and they get cut off, how much do you emphasize their ability to be able to attack and counter to change direction? Or do you want them, certain players, to be able to just attack, they get deep, and then to be able to initiate that next part as you talked about? What's your philosophy on attack and counter?
Okay, so the evolution, you know, when we met years ago, that was, you know, it's changed so much. So the evolution now is I'm coming down as the one. See, a lot of people think it's a four-out offense. The advantage of a four-out offense is that you have a single post, so you got one side you can really attack, right? And the advantage of a three-out offense is you have bigger gaps. So through the years, the evolution of it, why not take the best of both? So why not put somebody in motion? So if I'm the one coming down, I want four to cut through. So now that gives one what up top? Gives him the whole court where he can do what he wants. So now he can make his counter dribbles. So he might all of a sudden go right, all of a sudden he's jammed. He might make his move and come back and go left. So he might go left, come back, go right. So when four cuts through, his goal is always cut to score, stop beneath the basket, read now where's one going to go. If one's going to go three side, he's going to come out the two side. If one's going to go two side, he's going to come out the three side. And that's kind of the next evolution of what we put in. So the goal about your counters, yes. Now, if I'm in tight, if I happen to catch it on the two side, okay, they know if I drive two baseline, everybody knows where they're going. If I drive two middle, everybody knows where they're going. Is it just principles? So I don't want to really go right, then go left, then go right when I'm there. But I can make a quick move and then come back middle, or quick move middle, go baseline. That's not a problem there. Basically, what I'm trying to say is whatever you make, but don't play with the ball.
Don't hold it too long and don't mess around with it. And I imagine, again, without speaking directly, but we are talking a little bit about the Rockets. Is that part of what you wouldn't want it to evolve to, is that much messing around with the ball? We're talking in that example, that's a supreme talent. So to a certain extent, that eliminates anything we talk about. But we don't want players to mess around with the ball like that.
And I'm not talking about hard messing around. It was kind of neat as I went back when, you know, Mike D'Antonio was with the Sixers for a little bit. So I had a chance to actually sit and talk with Mike on different things. That was really interesting. With Harden, what you're talking about, that's completely different. I mean, his game is to be able to make a play with the ball, okay? But I think you know and I know if you're at the high school level or at the college level and you let one guy have the ball that much, one, if you're at the college level, how are you going to be able to recruit? Because the other four guys don't want to be around with that, okay? At the high school level, if you're stuck with one guy doing that, I think down the line, you're going to run into a little bit of trouble. I really do. But the thing with Harden, if you've taken a look, you know, James had to do that because Chris Paul and Capella went out. You know, with them back, he's not doing as much. And I think you'll see that evolution of it too.
That's great. Coach, how much do you think the progressions of teaching dribble drive differ from, you say, a youth to a high school to a college level? Would you teach it any differently at the different levels? I mean, maybe the speed that you install it, but in terms of actually the progressions, would it be any different?
It would be the same. You have to understand what you're doing. You have to understand the three basics of why you're running it. And then I think the nice thing, getting a chance to do some of the things at the NBA level, obviously they pick it up a lot faster. And when you kick it out, they make that three a heck of a lot more than they do in college or high school. But all the three levels that I've worked with, all the different levels from high school to junior college to NBA, you know, I still would stay with the same. Now, the difference is in the NBA, you got to do it quick with those guys because they don't want to be bored. So you got to really move it a lot faster. The college, I think you can take more time and teach it than I would take more time at the college and the junior college and high school level.
By teach it, do you mean like break it down a little bit more than you would say at the NBA level?
Yeah. NBA and high school and college, I think you want to do a lot of one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, break it down that way. In the NBA, maybe I'd go three-on-three to four-on-four to five-on-five.
No, that's great. Coach, knowing how long you've run it and you've run it at so many different levels and you've used concepts at different levels, what's the best defense against it? What has given it the most problems?
I would say a real physical defense that's going to bump you off your lines. They will get to you, especially if you get to the time of year. Maybe it might be playoffs or it might be you get to somebody's house where they won't call those fouls. You know, because my usual to the guys is, first bump, a good referee is never going to call. Second bump, they might start thinking about it. On that third bump, they're probably going to call. And if not, I'll be yelling at the referees to call that. So I think that's one of it. Some people struggle with teams that sag. But I think what happens with teams that sag, what I think what happens a lot of times, if you don't have a good outside shooting team and they sag, it's going to hurt you. There's no doubt about it. But if you can shoot outside and take it to the rack, if they sag, then what they're basically saying is, you know, they're trying to zone it, muck it up to where, you know, they're hoping that you miss your threes that day. And that's why, for me, I think, you know, Chris, I always like scoring on the other side of the ball. That's why I love pressing. That way, you got different ways to score. You're not just stuck in running a half court, you know, offense. I've told people this all the time. Everybody thinks I'm an offensive coach. I never have been. I've always been a defensive coach. I've always, and the offense actually was created from our press. Because we would go from trap to trap on our press. And once we started doing that, we couldn't run an offense. And that really started the dribble drive.
Well, and I think we talked about that. And you mentioned that a long time ago when we met at the clinic. And that was that you said that. And I had mentioned that really I was attracted to your defense first, some of those press concepts and whatnot. And I learned the dribble drive a lot more from you when you were up. But it's tremendous stuff as well. And we'll have to do another podcast on that. But so attacking the pack line, you talked a little bit about that, about having that balance between shooting and driving it. But do people try and switch much against it at this point? Is it switching is so popular or getting more popular?
The switching should never really come into effect. If they're switching, it's because, you know, you ran your kickbacks too close. Or you ran your kickups too close. You didn't see. I'll give you some more teaching points. Okay. You know, when I was growing up, way back, I hate to tell, if you used to skip the ball, that was kind of, they didn't like it. And then the big thing was, if you get ball reversal, that was good. Then it became where let's skip it because then you create the closeouts and you can attack the closeouts. See, I think one of the hardest things to do is attack from one side of the court to the other. And the reason it's so hard is before you know it, you go from strong side defense to weak side back to strong side. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. See, when you skip it, right, if I skip it, say, from the two to the three, okay, everybody's going to shift their defense over and everybody knows that they're on strong side and whoever's on weak side, weak side. Now, let's say I pass from one to four and I basket cut and I come out the three side. Now the four is going to drive that two gut. Okay, so when one has the ball, what is two? 2X is strong side defense, right? So when I pass one to four and I cut through, now what happens? 2X is now coming over into a gap because they're not strong side, they're weak side. And it's a tough position. Now I attack that side and all of a sudden 2X doesn't know, uh-oh, now I'm strong side, but I may give up the corner three or I'm strong side or I may get back cut. And to me, that's the hardest thing to guard is that triple gap going from a weak side to a strong side penetration. So I think anytime you can set that up, you have such a big advantage.
Dave Smart is one of the best coaches in the world, and now you can learn from him with never before available access. 3 all-access practices and 1 defensive coaching clinic are available at davesmartbasketball.com. What makes these all-access practice and clinic videos so unique? Dave Smart has won 12 national championships and has a winning percentage of 92%. Dave Smart's force weak hand defensive system is world-renowned and has never been shared in this way before. Dave Smart has a winning record in over 50 games versus NCAA Division I teams, having beaten Wichita State, Baylor, Wisconsin, and many others. Dave Smart is recognized by Jay Wright, Mick Cronin, Jay Triano, and many other top coaches in the world as one of the best minds in basketball. Learn from one of the greatest minds in the game who opened his doors and shared the game with us from one of the most successful basketball programs in the world. Go to davesmartbasketball.com now to learn more and to purchase all 4 videos.
Well, it's great stuff, and there's no question that can – it doesn't matter if a team switches their pack line. If you can get that, then you're going to get an advantage, and that's the whole point of this, is that it can attack multiple defenses, and maybe that's a good time to evolve it into, are you running this against zone? Are you using some concepts against zone? What's your philosophy in terms of that?
Okay, yes, you're using some of the same concepts. You're not going to use everything the same. Okay, for us, for example, let me tell you one of the biggest things against zones. In a man-to-man, when we get over half court, if I'm guard to wing, I expect my wing to be in the corners to open up the gap. Okay? In the zone, I expect my wings to be as high up as I can to get that pass from the guard. So that's completely different there. And the reason I do that is you're just not going to come down against a zone and be able to attack the gap and get something right away. So what we teach first is what's called a 2-game, okay, a 2-set. And what 2-set means is we basically want to get a mid-post and a short corner and go with a point and 2 wings and teach a little basic offense from that. And then once we teach that, we can attack any zone with the dribble drive principles. It's hard to do it over the air like this, but it's something that once they really understand it, it's really pretty simple. And I'll be honest with you, I literally every year spend, good gosh, maybe 3 hours on zone the whole year. That's it. Because we don't get zone much because we work so much on shooting. And to be honest with you, I mean, I know down the line I'll get zone more, but my kids have such freedom of shooting the ball and such confidence that when they see an open 3, they know that's part of our offense. We take it. Now, when I worked with, you know, when I would spend time with Cal, when Cal was at Memphis, he goes, you're a little too crazy for me, Vance. You know, he didn't like to have that. But I don't think it's bad if you teach how to rebound. And I think that's real critical. See, offensive rebounding for us is real critical. We have a set way that we go to the offensive boards depending on where the ball is shot. If it's shot strong side, if it's shot weak side. And that kind of gives you an advantage. I remember way, way back when it was, God, the old, is it Dale Ellis? No, Dale Brown.
Dale Brown?
Used to be that, what, LSU coach?
LSU, yeah.
He had a philosophy. He didn't mind taking the threes. He felt if he shot 30 threes, he felt that, look, out of every 10 threes, if we can make 3 of them, that's great. Because we're going to rebound those other 7 misses, and my goal is to get 3 or 4 of those rebounds, and it's going to give us overall a better chance of scoring and a higher percentage. And I kind of, that always kind of stuck with me when Dale said that. So for me, we have a way that we offensive rebound, because I think when you shoot shots that are close in, 15-footers and in, I think height has a lot more to do with the rebound. Okay, but I think when you shoot 3s, the way the ball is, it's a longer shot, longer rebound. I think heart and hustle has a lot more to do with the rebound than height. And we always kind of stress that.
Well, that's a great point. And actually, 2 podcasts ago, I had Aaron Fern on who talked about sending 5 to the offensive boards. And It makes sense a little bit too. I'm not saying you do that, but it makes sense relative to what you're talking about, just in terms of the hustle and the amount of threes we shoot. But also it leads into probably a better pressing system as well, since you're already somewhat matched up, different things like that. But coach, let's evolve that. And can you talk about what are your offensive rebounding rules, since we've talked about it a little
bit? Okay, no problem at all. I go one back, two back. And what I mean by that is most people, you always had their point guards be back, right? And when I started a long time ago, I was the same way. But in this offense, who's the one guy that attacks the most? It's usually your point guard. So now if my point guard attack, who had back, I couldn't have him be the back responsibility guy. And then to throw the next thing in, honestly, my two guy, if he's a great shooter, a lot of times they're going to hug the hell out of that guy. So if they really hug him and he's in that corner and they want to hug him, basically what he did is he opened up the offense for us. He may not like it, though. So what I did is on back responsibility, I would give my best shooter back responsibility. And what we would do is when that shot go up, let's say, Chris, you're one back. It doesn't mean you're the one man. That means you got back responsibility every time unless you shoot a corner three or you take it to the rack. Okay? Let's say I'm the two back guy. I'm going to boards every time unless you shoot the three or take it to the rack. So I like four going to the rack. I like one back. But my one back guy is at the NBA three top of the key. That's where I want him. Now, obviously, if they leak somebody out, he's got to go with them. That's his number one responsibility. But what we really try and teach is once that shot goes up, we're going to attack the boards, and I'll go on that in a little bit. My best shooter's back. Now, if we grab an offensive rebound, my best shooter's going to drag behind wherever that rebound comes. I'm really big on shoulders. You talked about earlier about how to teach driving. I think you remember I always talked about how to get your shoulders as soon as they can square to the basket when you drive. Players that aren't good drivers, their shoulders are usually going to face sideline or out of bounds. The good drivers are going to learn how to clip the hip and get their shoulders to the basket as soon as possible. So shoulders for me mean a lot. So now when I grab an offensive rebound, if my shoulders are squared to the basket, I earn that right to put it back up. If they're not squared to the basket, if it's toward the side or out to the out front, then we kick it for that quick three. I love getting that quick three off the offensive rebound. So my back guy, which is my two man, who's my best shooter, we try to get him anywhere from two to four more threes a game by being in that back position. Now, he feels like, okay, great, I got back responsibility. And if I get my butt back there, now I got a chance to get two or three or four more threes a game. I think when you become really good at working at that, that becomes really critical. Now, my rebounding principles are real simple. I love weak side coming in on the baseline side. That weak side rebounder, I always feel, is the laziest rebounder on the court. He's a guy that kind of looks, turns his head, goes to the board. And so what we teach is once he turns his head, we're coming hard baseline. Okay, if my big, and I think you know in our offense, our big, our five guy is usually on the weak side. So if the shot goes up and my big's on the weak side, he has to drive middle to go get the rebound. See, if he stands there or fights on that baseline side, I'm taking away my weak side guy coming in. So what we do is we have him go to the middle. We have the weak side guy come baseline, and we have that third guy on that side. He comes right through that gap. So we have all three. We have middle, weak side baseline, and weak side middle all covered. And I think, you know, more rebounds are going to go to the weak side, and that's how we do it.
Well, it's great, and I think people can understand your depth of thinking. And, again, knowing something this in-depthly only helps you teach it, but it also – gives confidence to your players in terms of their execution. So it's tremendous stuff. And coach, I've got so many questions here, but let's go. What's your favorite technique for creating a triple gap?
I think I just call it my 4-15 action. We come down, we go one to, okay, I got to change it because you know my 4-15. So those of you that don't know me, I kind of go with bookends. My five takes it out, but my five is my second point guard. I'm going to just let people know that now, just so I don't screw them up too much.
Yep.
My four is my big man. And I kind of joke around. I tell people, well, most fives want to be fours. So what I do in this offense, I say, look, you're a four. They're still running down the dang middle of the court. They're still going to go to weak side. So what I like to do is go down, come down hard, step back, hit the five, one to five, One cuts through, get five, that triple gap. Now, if I know, for example, let's say I know three's got somebody that's weak, that's guarding my three man, and I want to attack with my three. So all we do is I can go, what I can call 153 or 253, or I can go right into it. Let's say I go 153. That means one to five to three. One will now dribble at two. Anytime in this offense you dribble at somebody, they got a back door. Okay, so now two back doors. One uses a step back dribble. On that step back dribble, five comes over to the old one spot. One hits five, one drops to the corner. Five now will hit three, who came up and filled his spot. Five hits three, five cuts through. Now three's got that triple gap with one in the corner. Now, if two's your best shooter, now we like to call it 253, because now I'll go one to two. I'll pop two up, go one to two. One basket cuts, we look for the give and go. Five comes over, two to five to three. Five cuts, two's in the corner. So now three's got that triple gap with your best shooter in the corner.
Yeah, it's good to know. And I think coaches that know the offense can visualize that a little bit. Yeah. And yeah, no, it's good. And what's your favorite entry action to mix it up? And as we talked about, we've already talked about sagging defenses and switching, but just maybe your favorite entry action.
One of my favorites now, and I've really gone to, especially if you got a five who can move a little bit and do some things, is if we come down, one comes down and uses a step back dribble, that tells my five up top to cut through. So he's going to basket cut. And off his basket cut, if I want to run some action, let's say I want to call it just 14 action, that's one and four. Now what's going to happen is my big man, my four, is going to come right off of five's butt and come to the free throw line. Now we're going to hit him, and now one can do anything he wants, anything. He can basket cut, he can basket fake the cut, come back, they go underneath, he's going to shoot the three. He can go screen for the two. He can basket, come out the other way. Anything he wants to do, he's got that right to do. I just want him to play basketball. And then if he's not open, now my four can start the DHOs with whoever he wants. Now we start our cutting action from there.
Well, I like it. That mixes it up quite a bit and gives a different look to a defense that's prepared for one type of action and now has to defend multiple types of actions depending on what the point guard does. So that's good stuff. So, Coach, maybe coaches kind of talk a lot about having, I don't have the right personnel for this. Is there a wrong personnel to be able to run this? Or how would you tweak it if you didn't have a lot of, let's say, shooting, which they would have, say, at the high school or youth level where you can't recruit your roster? But you can still run the dribble drive. What type of things are you emphasizing if you don't have a lot of shooting?
And I get this asked all the time. What happens if you don't have good shooters? What happens if you don't have good drivers? Well, to be honest with you, you got a pretty bad team.
For sure.
Good shooters or good drivers. But let's just say you got good drivers. Okay. So now what you got to do, to me, it's like anything else. If you got a big guy and he's got a nice move, you're going to teach him a counter. That's only normal. So the counter in this offense, if you can drive, is can you hit a set shot three? Because if you can really drive, what's that defense going to do? They're going to back off of you. And they're going to give you some easy threes. I'll guarantee that. So you got to spend your time be able to, it's not like you got to hit 40% of your threes. If you can just hit 30 to 33% of your threes, you're going to still put that person in a tough position. So now what you're going to do is if you can really drive it, you got to learn how to be able to hit that open three. If you can really shoot it and you can't drive it, to me, there's two options you have. One, obviously, you want to learn how to drive. That's the counter. But I think good shooters got to learn how to cut. I think a lot of times people forget about that. They have to learn, how do I set myself up? Can I back cut? Can I kick up? I have to learn how to move without the ball. But honestly, Chris, I try and tell people, look, if you don't have good shooters the first year, this offense is still going to help you. And what's going to happen, it comes down to those daily 45 drills. If you don't work on shooting, I mean, let's be honest, if you don't have good shooters, how far are you going to go down the line anyway? And I think all of us want to be able to create what I call multidimensional players. I want my players to be able to both shoot and drive. And then once they master that, then I'm going to teach them that so-called floater in that mid-range game. But they got to master one of those two things. If I'm really a good driver, now I'm going to spend a lot of time on, can I just knock down that open three? Because I'm not going to have, if I'm a great driver, I'm not going to have people in my face. They're going to be backing off. Now, if I'm a great shooter, I'm going to have people in my face. So I've got to learn, how do I cut to get open, or can I put that ball on the ground? So all the drills that we do are going to make them better down the line. It's not going to change it in 2 weeks or 2 months. But if you really believe in it, which obviously I think you know I do, I think year in, year out, you have shooters and you have drivers.
Well, again, your drills that you do, and I will ask you that, but what are your favorite drills you're using right now? Say 2 to 3 that you love the most. But what I know about them is, regardless of what offense you run, they're valuable because, again, they develop ball mastery, comfort with the ball, and then decision making. And those are skills that apply to any offense wherever you end up playing. So, Coach, what are some of your favorite drills right now that you're doing? Is it pretty much the same? Have you added some different twists to them?
I've tweaked some drills. There's no doubt the blood drills are the favorite, and they're by far the best.
And there been much change to them, or pretty much what we know?
Yeah, there's been change. You know, the blood 22, I think, is pretty much the same. That's not going to change. See, what happens with the blood 44, I think the blood 44 is a tremendous drill. Okay, but what happens, a lot of teams don't have 16 guys in their practice. So we've gone to the blood 44 where we keep it full court going one way. So if I score, I stay on offense. Okay, so let's say I'm coming down. Remember, we always have the defense right at half court. I got my 2, 3, and 4 down on the baseline. I got 2X, 3X, 4X up in the gaps. Now here comes 1 against 1X coming down, full motion, and we're playing. If the offense scores, now what happens? Whoever was on defense stays on defense. The guy who came down on offense, he gets off the court, and the next guy on offense is coming right back at him. So it's the same continuous, but they have to stay on defense till they get a stop. That would be one of the changes on the blood 44 drill. The blood 33 drills are the same. You know, basically, all you're doing is teach them how to play basketball. Teach them how to see one side of the court to the other. Teach them how to clip the hip, how to get their shoulders to the bucket. That's not going to change at all. And then I would say the second, I still think our full court scramble, the 3-on-2 continuous, I think is a great drill because it teaches spacing. It teaches kicking the ball. It teaches how to get a quick shot up. And then the cardinal, the 2-on-1. Now, we do a little different on the cardinal. We go a 3-quarter cardinal, and then I do a half court, or what I call a backdoor cardinal right out of the offense, a 2-on-1. But again, the concepts are all the same.
Again, for coaches that don't know some of the things that you're talking about, I mean, Google pretty much will bring up most of them or refer you to something that you can get access. And Coach has so much information out there that it's not hard to find some of these drills. And the blood drills are tremendous and have evolved quite a bit in terms of some of the things that we do as well. So, because they're decision-making, and again, you're putting players in opportunities to be able to apply skills, which is great. Learn by doing. So some other questions, Coach, in terms of this. Do some people sacrifice primary transition because they run dribble drive? Whereas my thinking is dribble drive is a perfect complement to transition. But I find that some teams almost run it as set offense when they have advantages already. And they don't need to run the dribble drive to create the advantage. They already have the advantage, but their principles apply in transition already, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And there's a lot of coaches who, and this is something I think people got to understand. I'll give you a story about it. When I started working with Coach Cal when he was at Memphis, the dribble drive, John came and spent time with me. We talked and talked. I mean, we talked on the phone over 100 times. He came out to watch my junior college team at the time. And I still remember Larry Brown going to John saying, "What are you listening to this high school JC coach for?" You know?
Yeah.
You've been very successful. You don't need to change anything. And Larry's right. John didn't. But what John saw was something. He had some pretty special players. Obviously, Derrick Rose came later, but he had some special players, and I think he realized recruiting-wise, and that's the biggest thing I try to tell people, and I don't care if you're high school, junior college, or college, do you want to go to a high school that's going to hold the ball, get 45 to 50, 55 points a game, or do you want to go to a place that's going to push it, give you a chance to become as good as you want to become, scoring a 75 if you're in high school to 80 if you're in college, 80 to 85, and so forth. And I think most people rather score. So I think it's a heck of a recruiting tool that way. I really do.
And I agree with you, and I'm still shocked at how many teams don't try and play a little bit faster, and especially as we're talking about some of the college teams, still very controlled and maybe not evolving as much as the modern game is yet, but it'll come. And clearly some are having success with it as well.
Again, Chris, anybody, like I said, you know, you're talking about on the transition. See, I think the triple drive with the transition is a transition. It's a primary offense, and I think it's a secondary offense. And if you're a type of team, I know I've worked with so many different teams. I work with close over 1,000 teams now, that from high school, AAU, to college, to junior college, to NBA, to girls, you name it. I've worked with a lot of them. If you don't feel comfortable with it being your offense, that's fine. Take the different principles. That's not a problem. If you really want to get into it, then I think you really need to understand and learn all the different things. There's some teams that want to use it as coming down. If they don't get it, then go set their offense. Some teams want to come down, run a set. If they don't get it, then they go to the dribble drive. And I think whatever you want to use it for, that's how you feel. Take advantage of it.
Well, it's great that you're proud, and you're proud of people that have not just adopted it, but adapted it to whatever their needs are. And I think that's an important part of all this in terms of what you've shared, is that the coaches have made it their own in their way. And that's got to bring you tremendous pride.
It does. But I think for a lot of them, you know, I talk with them, and I'll tell you this, whoever uses the dribble drive first in their section or their area or their league, I can't tell you how many people have emailed me back and say, thank you, thank you, thank you. We've had our best year. We've won this. We won that. We've never had so much success. There's a lot of people haven't seen it, or they haven't seen it. You know, obviously in my area now, everybody just about runs it. So they see it a lot more. And it's not, you know, for some people, it's not as effective, because now you really got to know the ins and outs about it. Everybody runs it, but now can you really break down the little breakdowns? And that's what it takes. And I think the other thing is people want instant success with it. And all I'm going to tell you is that each year you're going to see how much better your players are going to get. I think the biggest tribute to it that of running it.
Without maybe specific examples, do you wish that the NBA, like, or do you think the NBA level, if you were the head coach, you could run this as the main offense, that this could be the offense that you run at the NBA level?
No, you couldn't. A big part of it, you could, but not. To play earlier, before I went to the NBA, I would have said, God, why can't they? When you play 3 games in 4 nights in 3 different cities, and let's just take, you know, you got 82 games, you got 6 to 8 non-league games, so you got 90 games plus playoffs, and playoffs could be 4 7-game series. And to be able to push it that hard all the time, I think it's tough. I really do. Now, you get somebody like a Russell Westbrook, who's got that kind of energy, and you learn how to open those gaps and move people, I would run it probably a little bit more. I think it all depends on, you know, with the NBA, what type of players that you have. You know, there's no way you're going to have LeBron want to go full steam with that. But then, you know, pushing it in transition like that. But then when you get in the half court, imagine, okay, I'm going to give LeBron a triple gap. Who the heck's going to – you can't stop him with a single or double gap. Now you're going to give him a triple gap. And you put one of the best shooters in the corner over there, then you've got a 7-footer. If he throws a lob, he's going to dunk it. It's pretty darn hard to stop.
No question. That's a great answer, Coach, and great understanding of it. And again, maybe we're playoffs, we're NCAA tournament, we're approaching that time of year, so it's appropriate. But does scouting make it that much stronger? Like, you knowing exactly where to attack with your best matchup versus their weak matchups? And what are some things that you identify in terms of when you first look at an opponent's, say, defense or player personnel, in terms of deciding what things to emphasize that for that specific opponent?
Great question. I think I already told you, number one, I think right away you got to know how their big guy defends.
Yes.
Okay, if he's a step-up defender, if he's a stay-home defender, if he's a shot blocker who waits at the rim for you, you got to know that. Like I said, we knew anytime somebody's going to step up on us, we knew we'd get our four-man, or my four, everybody else's five, our big was going to get some easy lobs that game. Not even a question. So that, I think, is number one. Then two, are they going to deny the wings? If they're not going to deny the wings, or they're going to play pack line, I think you need to understand that. And then I think the other one is exactly what you said. Where are your advantages? Where is their weak spots on defense that you know you could beat? For example, they might have, and I always like to do this, they might have a great shooter on their team. And you know, and I know, a lot of times a great shooter is not one of their better defenders. Okay? So if he's a great shooter, not a great defender, we're going to put them in that sweet spot up top. I call it the sweet spot in that 415 action, given that triple gap, probably 3, 4, 5 times early to start that game. If not the first 2 or 3 times, we're going to put them in that spot and try to attack them. You know, so those are some of the things that we would like to do.
Well, it's great. And you're sharing that in terms of scout to your players, you would share those things. Those are kind of the things that you would emphasize in every game and in every opponent.
Yes. We know, you know, obviously I don't want to start the game. You know, there's sometimes we'll start the game and say, let's run this. But I just found through the years when I do that, I'm kind of going back. You know, the whole beauty of the offense is what? We let them make their own reads. And when your team becomes really good, and I had this a few years, they would come down, say on a free throw, whatever else, they would know what to run, and they would call it themselves, saying, okay, hey, that 3X over there is weak, so let's run 253 this time. Let's get this player, and let's take advantage of that player. That's when you know you're really good at it.
Coach, what are you charting nowadays in terms of trying to emphasize certain things within the offense or to, again, to be able to identify weaknesses of the defense? What type of things are you charting?
To me, I think it's pretty simple, Chris. You want, remember I talked about you like threes, you love layups.
Absolutely, yeah, great line. Okay.
So I really want to make sure, you know, for example, if, let's say you got 20 threes up, I expect 40, 45 into the rack. I think the one of the biggest things that you got to make sure happens is that you win that free throw battle. You're not going to win the free throw battle if you shoot a lot of threes. You're not going to win the free throw battle if you shoot a lot of pull-ups. See, I always felt like when I watch the other team warm up and I see him take a lot of mid-range shots, in my own mind, I tell my own players' mind, we got a big advantage right now. We really do. Because they're going to shoot a 38 to 40% shot, where every time we're going to shoot a 60% shot. And I just think if you take more of those and you understand that, the advantage comes your way. It's not going to come your way all the time. You know that, how the game goes. But I just know through the years, it definitely has come our way more.
Yeah, no, it's good to know. And it's just an amazing conversation, Coach. And so many things have come from this offense and so much positive basketball has come from this offense. But it's great to hear you're very passionate about it. And you've gone through so many different steps in your coaching career as well. So to hear how it's evolved and still the passion remains is amazing. And is there any other type of advice you suggest for coaches if they want to learn this offense? Where do you suggest they go or what do you suggest they do?
Honestly, just be patient. Read about it. You know, there's plenty, you know, obviously I have different videos with championship and so forth that are really, they're a little bit expensive, but the reason they're expensive is that they're 5-6 hours deep with a lot of material. And I would just say, be patient. And then the other thing, I have no problem. They're more than welcome. You know, I have coaches come in all the time, visit me at every level. They're more than welcome to come and watch a couple of my days of practice, see how I put things in. And I honestly, that was the best way I learned. When I had the opportunity to go see some of these special coaches, it was neat for me.
Well, I'm sure you won't mind that I mentioned this story, but talking to Nate Oates recently, who, when he was a high school coach at Romulus, visited you. And, you know, again, we talked about that experience and just, I mean, I've been so blessed and grateful in my time to be able to watch so many different coaches and have coaches come watch practice as well. And it's just amazing that you open the door and, you know, you look at a coach like that, that you've influenced and, you know, and I see principles of what you do and what he does too. So just amazing stuff, Coach. I really appreciate you taking time to be able to share the game with us.
You got it, Chris. Thank you.
All right, Coach. Take care.
A quick interruption to this week's episode to let you know what you're missing if you are not currently a member of BasketballImmersion.com. Basketball Immersion is one-stop shopping for video learning to stimulate your basketball coaching using evidence-based practices. Watch hundreds of videos covering BDT shooting, zero-second skill training, how we teach using small-sided games and a games approach to coaching, as well as team concepts and systems like trail trap, flow offense, two-sided fast break, and much, much more. NCAA, NBA, pro, high school, and youth coaches are amongst the thousands of coaches who are a part of our community. Go to BasketballImmersion.com today to stimulate your basketball coaching.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at BasketballImmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.